You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 200. Today is a fun milestone episode, of course, and it's also a Christmas episode, Steve. Very excited. I think we had one like 3 years back that I remember was a Christmas special, because you can't forget when you have Paul Sporer on as a guest. That was sweet. While we're going down memory lane, but we don't get these Christmas episodes very often, so it's a lot of fun that it's marking 200 episodes, and we are keeping with the theme here and going with all WAF wants for Christmas, with a little wish list episode for targets in draft rooms. We got about 8 names we'll do some deep dives on. Going to be a lot of fun. But Steve, these are reflection pods, man, because I know I had it in the rundown. Less than 3% of podcasts ever make it to 200 episodes, and we have done it. Can't believe it's been 5 years. Fantastic. It's great to be on with you here talking baseball in the middle of us being snowed in central Illinois. So how's it going out there? And happy 200, man.
We just got through the snow. Our snow came over the weekend on Saturday into Sunday. So that's a little odd, right? It usually goes from you guys from west to east, right? So
I should clarify, we're not getting snowed on. Okay. We just haven't seen grass in like a month. Although going to start warming up, which is nice. We got hit pretty hard.
This was the first snow for us up in the Northeast. So
there you go.
Lucky there, but I don't know. They're saying it's going to be. I don't know who they are, but they're saying there's going to be a lot of snow this winter, so we'll see. I don't want to say I never would have imagined that we got to 200 episodes, like, but it was never something that I like thought about, and like now to see that number even more so than 100, right? Like, you know, I don't know, you're more cognizant of it when we were first doing it, and you know, you 10 episodes was a big deal at that point, and for us that. Like, this was our first sort of break into the industry. Not that,
that we're mainstays.
Exactly. You know, yeah. I still, you know, creep myself out even thinking that I'm of any bit of importance in the industry. Just even using that word gives me the heebie jeebies. But, it's a big deal. I mean, you know, we've put a lot of time into this, and to stick with it, I think is special. I'm glad we got to do it around this time of year. It is a cool Christmas gift to ourselves, just to sort of acknowledge, the consistency that we've done with this. I'll never forget, like, Nick Pollock's first, like, words to us, or just, like, his biggest piece of advice was just get your reps and, like, be consistent. Like, that's how you grow your show, just being consistent and posting every week and not missing episodes and being consistent with it. And, you know, to get that fact that we've gotten to 200, you know, I know that this is not even a side gig for us. It's probably like a side gig, right? Especially considering that we've become parents during that time. And,
you know,
it was a lot different of a scenario when we started this show and had a lot more free time. Like, I think we started this like in the height of COVID.
Yeah. Neither one of us were married.
Yeah. Neither one of us were married. Like, you know, we literally couldn't go anywhere at the time just because the world was shut down. So to stick with it through becoming, you know, even busier and everything like that, I think is pretty special. And it's I know we've missed some. This was the first year that we actually like skipped a week, like I think even like in season or like just a few days even.
So the no hitters up.
Exactly. But still, the fact that we got to 200, it's worth mentioning. I'm glad you brought it up. I'm glad it's around Christmas. Here's to 200 more.
Yeah, man. And thanks to Pitcherless for the support for us. But most of all, thanks for the listeners and anybody kind of coming back and trusting us for an hour while they're doing laundry or commuting. And, you know, when we get those comments of, you know, we work out in the mornings and listen to your show, like that, those have been some of the coolest parts of this whole run. So, yeah, thank you guys for the support. And we're very excited to be looking ahead to next season. I think, you know, that's always the beauty of the balance of winter and fantasy baseball, is at least in the cold central Illinois where I'm at, it's the deeper you get into winter and the more it feels like, oh my gosh, is it ever going to warm up? Is it ever going to be daylight? The closer you are to fantasy baseball and the closer you are to the best episodes or the best time of the year for me doing this podcast when we get close to draft season. So that is the segue to tonight's topic. And like we said in the upfront, this is the Christmas wish list for our fantasy draft targets. So I know we do our chalkboard right before opening day where we kind of flag in the ground three guys, usually a few targets, a few fades. This is a little more open and loose. I think, Steve, we always kind of balance trying to bring in some names that we haven't talked about as much. Yes. But this, you know, this exercise, I'll be curious to see how you approach it, Steve, but I go to ADP and sort by position. And, you know, I'm such a respondent, and I know early ADP is often just grooves or reference points. And we talk about how it's okay to reach for a guy in the eighth round if you love him, even if his ADP is in the 10th round. But I still look at ADP as kind of that foundational point and start formulating my opinions of where I feel like, oh, wait, I'm all the way to these names. And then I see that name. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, you kind of peel back the onion and you look at underlying numbers, you look at team context, things like that. And I just think when you look at the list that we have tonight, at least how I approached it is I'm trying to find some of the names that I will start circling as like, these are guys I actually want, which is the nature of a target. And I think the last thing that we've said on some recent episodes is that the industry is starting to get so good and sharp when it comes to looking at underlying stuff. This gets harder and harder every single year. Gone are their days where there's just like a wide awake sleeper at ADP 220. Like, you know, maybe close to March, these guys will start scooting up. So that was one other thing I was kind of looking at is like, oh man, it feels like the number next to their name on ADP doesn't match what I think the hype should be or the value and the bargain that I think should be there. So yeah, I got three pitchers and one hitter, but maybe give me the high level on your thoughts with this exercise and kind of where we are with the overall process, knowing that the heart of draft season is 3 months away.
Yeah. Same approach. I sort of approached it as an early our guys sort of episode, like, oh, like if I'm drafting now, these are guys that I really want and like their value. Whereas when we do chalkboard, like I think it's more of a game. Like, you know, we want to essentially place bets one way or the other on and then take firm stances one way or the other based on what the market is saying and saying that value is wrong. This is more, okay, this is something that we like and a player that we liked based on cost and just even, you know, prior very to numbers. Cost, like just numbers skills driven. And someone, people that we want for that. Like there was a lot of guys that I was looking at. It's like, oh, some familiar names that, you know, Kerry Carpenter, Mike Trout, I'm already falling in love again, you know, the over-reliable guys. But I shied away from the two and wanted to do like four fresh names and even names that we really didn't talk about like in recent episodes. Maybe one guy is someone that we talked about 2 weeks ago or so. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, a similar approach. Excited to get into it. And definitely guys that like if I were in a draft room right now, like I would go out of my way to add to the queue. To start.
I love it. Well, without further ado, I will go ahead and set us off here, Steve. And I did this by accident, but all of my names fall between ADP 125 and 180 or that range. But I kind of like that because that's when usually it opens up. So Jacob,
that's always our favorite range, right?
It really is. It really is. And Jacob Mizorowski is one that I feel like we've mentioned in passing on the show. Of course, we did the deeper dive when he first got called up and, you know, all the hype. Obviously, there was a huge amount of prospect pedigree and what he was doing in the minors. But I feel like he got called up the same time as some other really big pitchers. So I feel like I never, and I missed out on him on Fab and in my home league. So now it's kind of like fresh start, you know, after we saw him for, what was it, three and a half months. We get an entire offseason to assess. And what I would say as the top line for Mizorowski is he is who was in my head when I was setting up this topic, saying the name and the hype and the skill set t- to me doesn't match the number next to it. And the ADP for him is 125 at the moment. And I feel like there just might be a little bit of, it's weird to call it like prospect fatigue for somebody who's this new and made such a loud impact, but then he cooled off. So like when you think about his first few starts, he was completely lights out. He looked like an SP1 after five starts. The game logs all passed the smell test that like this guy could be an ace. The walk rate was the one thing that we were concerned about, and that kind of lasted throughout the season. But he had a really rough August where the walk rate ballooned up to like 15%. And he just kind of came back to being good, but like, oh, these are growing pains. But I think to what Nick Pollock says all the time, that like what you want from a pitcher is to see that they can get through those kind of rough patches and come out on the other side solid. And Mizorowski showed us that a little bit in the playoffs across 12 innings. He had only three walks, so he definitely improved the walk rate. Obviously, under high pressure, high leverage situations, those weren't starts. He was being brought into the games, which is a little bit different, but 16 strikeouts in 12 innings, really good ratios. And yeah, this is a guy that, you know, out and out 30% strikeout rate upside. The 10% walk rate has always been there through the minors. It's been even worse than that. So, you know, make no mistake, that is a question mark. But to me, that's the same question mark that has followed a Hunter Green or going back further, like the Dylan Cease. Like
Blake Snell to this day, right?
Yeah, exactly. And these are guys that, to me, it's not an insurmountable thing to become an absolute stud. And this guy has all of the goods. 7'6" extension, which is, the kryptonite for me when it comes to evaluating pitchers. And
we're not supposed to, use anything other than G language here, Vanford. That's pretty, you're talking dirty to yourself there with that extension talk there.
I know it. Yeah, it's got to be PG. But yeah, that much extension is would afford like a 93 mile per hour fastball, and it sits 99. So to me, that again reminds me of like that Logan Gilbert base of an out and out like excellent fastball, and then his secondaries have room to improve. But even if he doesn't, I really think this is like a mid threes ERA pitcher. The whip won't be great, but a lot of his projections right now for the Brewers, who should get a lot of wins again, are 150 innings pitch. So I think this at ADP 125, it's like, it's not to me, this name, this skill set, this opportunity, this volume projection, I feel like this is the name that usually is going around 95 to 105. And the fact that it's 20 picks later has me circling Mizorowski as like, oh, wait, he's going right in front of Shane Bieber and right after Kevin Gausman. Like, yeah, I'm in. Sign me up, because I do think this is the guy who could be an ace by the end of the season, because we're already anointing him an ace after his first five starts. So, yeah, I really like Mizorowski. He's probably not going to go much more than 150, 160, but big fan, and I think that there's value here. So, yeah, that's my long rant on Mizorowski, but Steve, your thoughts on that one.
I vaguely recall, and maybe, I don't know if I've said this, if he said this off air, if we talked about it on the show, but like, and obviously you root for the player to do well, and you know, Nick's thing, he wants all pitchers to be dope. That's a great tagline, right? I want Jacob Mizorowski to be amazing. I think he will be. That said, like, I think we were like, this is kind of good because the hype may be cooling off, and you know, it's not going to be a top 75 pick, top 50 pick, as it was trending his first 10 starts or whatever, five starts through the first his first 30 innings or whatever, right? And he did have an inflated ERA, did have some blow up starts, and did have a game where I think like he walked the first four batters of a start or something like that, right? And in the back of my mind, I was like, all right, this is kind of cool because I really like Jacob Mizorowski, and maybe his price will be a little bit depressed. And what do you know? It is. It isn't being drafted as like the Spencer Swalbach in the 70s, yes. At least not yet. So, you know, I think this is a great call. I think there's tremendous value here. I think that you saw what he can do, and I think you'll see more of that, more of the first five starts and less of the final seven starts that he had.
Yeah,
2025 at the majors,
a full off season too.
Yeah,
after you've been in the majors, like you can't overlook how much growth you can have from that.
And there was a lot of talk. I think his pitching coach, the Brewers pitching coach, talked with him in spring training after that, the spring showcase game where it was all the prospects, and he kind of got lit up, and he had like a heart to heart with Jacob Mizrowski, and was like, "Look, you need to be better than this, like one way or the other." And what do you know? Like he figured it out. He trimmed the walk after a few walk rates after a few starts in AAA, got called up, and lit the world on fire, and showed what he could be, and like pronounced himself as a starter. Right? Like this offseason, you know, I've loved Jacob Mizrowski as a prospect for years. It was starting to fade a bit because it looked like, hey, maybe this guy is destined for the bullpen. He can't have the control. And it was pretty close to that, honestly. And he completely changed that around with, you know, some tweaks in his mechanic and finding that consistency. So that's huge for him. Like the comp, like he's able to do it. He showed it. And I think there is a big year ahead for Mizrowski. And yeah, like this is a player where it's the hype kind of isn't there. And I'm kind of glad it isn't yet, because this guy has the upside of, like, you know, like,
I mean, struck out nine Dodgers in the World Series or in the NLCS.
This could be the next Crochet. Like that's really, really
high praise.
That's not far off from actually happening in my mind.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think, like, when you just translate it to the numbers, some of the early projections for some reason have that K rate dropping down to like 25.6% with an 11% walk rate. But
he's never come close to that.
No, ever. No, yeah. He has been eclipsing 30% every step of the way. And again, like NLCS, five innings against the Dodgers, game three, nine strikeouts in five innings. Like this guy is such a stud. So hopefully the price does remain there. But Steve, let's swing over to you to talk about another pitcher, an exciting one that we have not talked about on the show, or at least enough. Mm-hmm.
No, we have not, and I'm glad we did a show that allowed me to bring him up. That's Tatsuya Ima. I believe I'm saying that correct. That's a few of the pronunciation guides that I looked at. Ima is the last name.
Okay.
I-M-A-I. He's coming over from Japan. He's currently being drafted around ADP 195. That's rising, though. In recent drafts, he's going around pick 140. Obviously, when he signs with a team, depending on who that is, like, that's probably only going to shoot up. So, you know, take that ADP value with a grain of salt. But yeah, he looks to be like the next big thing coming over pitching wise from Japan. Last year in 162 2/3 innings pitched, he had a 28% strikeout rate, a 7% walk rate, and a 192 ERA. That was coming off of 2024 where he was just as good, 173 innings, 2.34 ERA, 26.3% K rate, and 9.8% walk rate. So that's nice that he improved on the walk rate. Mm-hmm. He's 27 years old, so coming over in the prime of his career. I know MPB is a lower run environment, so take those ERAs with a grain of salt. But what's exciting is the pitch makeup data as far as the fastball composition. You know, Sarah sent a great tweet a few weeks back stating that Ima's fastball comps really well to Joe Ryan's. And we know how amazing Joe Ryan's fastball is, despite the average to slightly below average fastball velocity from Joe Ryan. You know, his arm angle, his low release point, and that ride that he generates from his slot makes his fastball essentially unhittable at, you know, 93 miles an hour. To be comped to that is great. And oh yeah, there's more. Ima throws about a mile and a half harder than Joe Ryan. So a lot to be excited about with the fastball shape. Check out that tweet by Eno from the middle of November. I am super excited to see where he signs.
I think
that he's going to be, you know, another guy that comes over and produces immediately, like Kodai Senga did, like Yamamoto did to an extent prior to getting injured in his first year. I don't know if it's going to be the Yamamoto, Cy Young Award winning type of thing, but I think it could definitely be close to a Shohei Inoue performance. Another guy with surprising ride and from a fastball that doesn't have elite velocity, but still an elite fastball and splitter. So it's exciting because he has those sort of qualities that make fastball good. That fastball's good, and he has the velocity on top of it. So really excited about him and think that he's a great value right now and will be regardless of where he lands ADP wise once he signs.
Yeah, I had a December ADP split up, and I saw his name like propped in there, like you said here, like around the 140s. I was like, oh boy, this one is going to be rising up. It's going to be a name we're going to be talking about and watching closely. And next to happen, I believe his deadline to make a decision with his current contract situation is January 2nd. So hopefully, getting close to the holidays, I feel like less of the hot stove stuff happens, but this one might happen. And I know there's some rumors with like the Phillies, the Cubs, the Yankees, big markets. I mean, I guess, do we have to put the Dodgers in there as well? Are they linked at all with
Ema? I think Dodgers, Mets, yeah, you can never rule them out. Yeah. Yankees as well, yeah.
But all pretty good landing spots in terms
Cubs, I saw.
Yeah, Lance, offense, pitch development. Yep. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. I'm excited to see more and better understand kind of the repertoire, but not a huge guy. I think that's another Yamamoto comp, as they're both around like 5'10", 5'11", so not this like dominating presence, but, certainly seasoned. He's got pitching experience.
Imanaga, too, is not the biggest builder, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one there, Steve. Tatsuya Ima. And man, if you can jump in at ADP 195 or anything close right now, that's clearly
I don't think you're getting around there now. Yep. But
okay, well, yeah, we got a handful of other names that we're going to get to, but we're going to go ahead and take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, you couldn't have a more yin and yang transition here from Mizorowski and Ima to Yandy Diaz.
It's going to be on my list, dude. This is a good one.
No way. Okay. I love that you had him on there, because Diaz is not this like sexy, his draft stock is not going to be shooting up month over month, age 34. It's like what you see is what you get. And, pretty much since he switched his launch angle from like negatives and ground balls to being passable with double digit homers, we've kind of known who Yandy is, but I feel like we're still sleeping on how much the good parts of Yandy Diaz can help us from a fantasy standpoint. And right now his ADP is at 135. He is the 14th first baseman off the board, but running the old Fangraphs auction calculator on his projections for 5x5, he would actually be the 6th best first baseman based on value, despite being the 14th one that goes off the board. So I think you could almost, not that you need to, or I would recommend it, take his ADP, cut it in half. And that's kind of where his value is falling, because of the fact that his batting average is just such a bankable asset. And I know we always talk about a batting average floor in the early rounds and how that can be kind of overlooked, as can be runs, which Yandy Diaz is a huge, a boost for your roster, your roto, whatever you need. Diaz is doing that stuff, that the high average and the runs, but the pop has also taken a step forward. Last year, he had a high watermark for his career with 25 homers. Granted, that was at Steinbrenner, where he did have some wall scrapers out in right field. So maybe it's more like you're happy with 20 homers or more. But I think we're now looking at enough years in a row where Diaz can be chalked up for a 285 average without wish casting there. And it could be even better. Last year, he had the 7th best batting average in the league. The runs, the RBIs are not nothing. The only thing that he really lacks is the stolen bases. But when you put all of that into a guy that's going 135, he just does a lot of stuff that you can't get elsewhere in that range. So I love Diaz here, Steve. I think, you know, other than the fact that he's getting older and that could fall off, there's not a huge, huge ceiling like there are some other names around here. I just think maybe the ceiling comes in from him doing better than what the projections have. Because even this, the projections that have him as like a top 80 type of player are for a like 21 homers. I think it's like a 280 batting average, but we've seen Yandy do 300 a couple times. So yeah, I just think this is a huge opportunity to get average, get, you know, some of these rare stats at a first base position where you usually go for a huge amount of pop. So you probably got to compensate there. But yeah, I'm really big on Yandy, and I think you won't have to reach at this range, which is one of the best parts about a 34-year-old being on your target list. But thoughts about Yandy? You said you were liking him too.
I think he's just a super undervalued fantasy asset at this point. You know, for a lot of reasons, right? The power isn't elite. The age, even just the team, just isn't sexy, right? You know, there is, I guess, a bit of concern, like the 25 homers. He did play half his game at Steinbrenner. Like,
yep.
You know, so going back to the trop. But, I mean, hey, he did hit 22 homers in 2023, right? You know, yeah, it was a bit of a disappointing year, 2024. We had just a 755 OPS, and that kind of led him to be basically a forgotten asset last year. Mm-hmm. With just the 14 homers, but that's the outlier among the last 4 years since 2022. You know, like that was still a 120 WRC plus. So, real life player, like he's never been worse than 20% better than a league average hitter. Mm-hmm. And he still helped you in batting average a bit that year too, right? With a 281, the 65 RBIs and 55 runs weren't great, but also don't like kill you. But you know, he's a player that, you know, it was the most games that he played too at 150 in the last, four seasons. Right. So that helps with the counting totals too. If he can stay on the field with the amount of hits that he gets and runs and in a decent lineup. Right. You know, I know I kind of talked him down, but, there's a lot that he does well. Like it's like a Stephen Kwan, like it's like a different version of the Stephen Kwan profile, right? Like mm-hmm. more power, like 15 to 20 homer power, obviously slightly less batting average. But hey, I mean, he does have a 330 in there, a 296 and a 300. So, you know, I know people like Stephen Kwan. I've always been one of them. But I think there's a really good real life baseball player in here. And someone that I think is undervalued in the fantasy world, especially as he's getting up there in age. But it looks like he's still able to contribute. So I like this a lot and think he's just a guy who will never have the hype that probably doesn't get as much as he deserves.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up volume, too, because the projections that had him so high on that auction calculator had him projected at 133 games. His past 4 years on average has been 142 games. Last year it was 150. So that durability has definitely been there. And then, yeah, it's a simpler thing, but honestly, I mean, he's average wise a notch above Kwan, which is kind of like, yeah. Almost, so you're like, really, is he? Yeah, but he's almost more in more in the air of, and not quite Luis Arraez, but like some of those specialists that people give so much helium to. I think just because Diaz is this jacked first baseman, you like don't want to give him that same nod. Mm-hmm. But you can assemble a really interesting lineup, and I think kind of a sneaky value one if you make up for the pop by going Diaz here. So anyway, that's pick 135. Steve, let's swing back over to you to talk about a hitter that is going in that top 70 area.
Top 70 area. Yeah, that's Ben Rice, top 70 and rising. Yeah, this is the guy that I think we've talked about recently. But there's too much for me to like here. To not bring him up as someone that I'm sort of targeting. And probably will be for the rest of draft season. I mean, what is there not to like? And probably a reason for why he's going 40 to 50 in most recent drafts is the most recent news that's come out about him. And that's Aaron Boone stating that, you know, Ben Rice is going to play versus most lefties, as he should. I'd argue that Ben Rice is, even if Bellinger comes back, I think Ben Rice is the Yankee second best hitter. There is just so much that he does well. We've talked about all year long how he was like basically one of the most unlucky hitters, and it turned around. He put together a great year at 255, 337, 499, and 836 OPS, the 26 homers. But that was underperforming. As good as that is,
yeah,
for a guy that's catcher eligible, going to be catcher eligible, going to play every day in Yankee Stadium behind or in front of Aaron Judge, with some of the best batted ball qualities that you'll see outside of Aaron Judge. I don't get it here. Like, there's this is a budding superstar. I know that's probably hot takey, but like, I don't know. I see Ben Rice as someone that could be like a Nick Kurtz, like, you know, go on one of those runs with how hard he hits the ball, how well he hits the ball. And, you know, I know that there's a lot more that goes into it. And, you know, you need to be able to pull the ball and hit fly balls. But he does that. His pull air percentage is elite. He hits the ball in the air 60% of the time. Like, he hits a bunch of line drives. Like, here's crazy stats. Okay. Ben Rice is 90th percentile or better on Savant in ex-WOBA, ex-BA, ex-LUG, so all the expected stats. I know that there's issues with them, taken for a grain of salt. Fine. If you don't care about them, whatever. Going beyond that, his exit velocity, his barrel rate, his hard hit, launch angle sweet spot, his chase percentage, all above 90th percentile. Oh, he pulls his fly balls. Oh, he's really good. He doesn't chase. That's 89th percentile. He doesn't strike out. His plate skills are good. Like Ben Rice, you know, it's like the Step Brothers meme. Did you just become my favorite player? Like, yep. Like, you know, like, Ben Rice is my favorite player and should be yours too. Like, this guy is really, really good.
Well, first of all, for the rest of his career, Steve, I will take all the Ben Rice hype because it haunts me to this day when I overspent on him in our WAF listener league, and my home league never let me hear.
Two years ago, right?
It's like, you're never wrong. You're only early. And we liked him, but last year, you're right. I mean, it was, it felt like every episode last season we were like, Ben Rice falls on this chart. Ben Rice is one of these names. He's an April to May riser, like all that stuff. And he put in a great season with that 836 OPS, 26 homers. But, you know, looking at the fact that he played 138 games, I think the underlying stuff says, yeah, probably should have been 34 homers, especially when you consider like the short porch. It is a match made in heaven, the fact that he carries the C from playing catcher 36 times last year, just as icing on the cake, 26 years old. And I was nodding my head when you were talking about the Nick Kurtz comp, but the thought that comes in is, yeah, but he doesn't have that 30% strikeout rate. I mean, he's a guy that's had, you know, the it's like the hitter version of the K minus BB, right? Where it's like he takes a walk, so that helps with all the real baseball stuff and runs scored, but also he's striking out less than 20% of the time. So if it doesn't pop this year, we need to, you know, read a 20-page white paper on like what is unique about, you know, is this going to be one of those anomaly ones? What's happening? But everything says this is a full green light, and especially with the news you said about he's gonna hit against lefties and everything, I don't know why he wouldn't be up in the same breath, if not in front of Shai Langeliers, 10 picks before this, right? And that's kind of the idea.
Here's sort of the weird part of his profile, I guess, that led to him, quote unquote, underperforming this year.
Mm-hmm.
On Baseball Savant, there's like a run values table. It tells you how hitters and pitchers, vice versa, perform versus certain pitch types, right? Ben Rice had a 9 run value, which is really good, versus sinkers, a 6 run value, which is good, versus sliders, and a 0 run value versus forcing fastballs, which to me jumps off the page. Like,
interesting.
Hit sinkers that well and you're hitting sliders, like what's going on with a fastball? Like, can you just not catch up to it? He did okay. I mean, he hit 255, slugged 482, versus fastballs, versus forcing fastballs last year, but his XBA was 315, his X slug was 654, and his X woba was 440 versus a 356 actual woba.
So
his hard hit percentage versus forcing fastballs was 69.8%. 70% of the fastballs that he hit were hit above 90 miles an hour. Like, he crushed fastballs, but just did not get any actual tangible results on them.
Wow.
That's going to change. Like, I think Ben Rice is someone that could have a monster 2026.
Yeah. Okay. Well, switching gears to another name we talked about throughout last season that just kind of carries over. We start to develop our WAF guys. I think we would say Ben Rice is one, and Trevor Rogers is another one that, Steve, you were talking about in kind of the summer months of, like, don't miss what he's doing. This is, you know, how early does he go in next year's drafts? And I don't have the exact numbers in front of me of what we were projecting, but I think it was a lot sooner than an ADP of 162. Rogers with the Orioles, he was their best pitcher last year. He should be opening day for them. And on a bounce back year that at this point we thought maybe would never come. It felt like we got burned so many times of, oh, is Trevor Rogers back? And, you know, this and that. And with the Orioles last year, across 18 starts, had the 1.81 ERA and a 0.90 whip. Strikeout rate is never like jaw dropping, 24%, but the 7% walk rate is really solid and kind of helps with that low whip. Sure, there will be some regression, right? But it's the more real changes under the hood that we were excited about, that he added a much needed tick to the velocity on his fastball from 92 to 93. He threw the fastball a lot more last season, and that fastball had a 158 batting average against. Looking at kind of his pitch plots, the fastball and the sinker, which makes sense, lives right in the same zone, but they have much different movement patterns, of course. So I think it's those two pitches playing off of one another that make those so effective. But still looking at some of the swing and miss stuff, even though he's not a huge strikeout guy, his slider sweeper combo jumped with up to a 40% whiff rate versus 25% that it was at year before last. So Trevor Rogers at an ADP 162, and this is a guy that they will want to be a workhorse. He's projected out at like 180 innings. I think this is another one that it's like, it's not your, I know some people, there are some Trevor Rogers truthers out there. I don't think he could turn into like an SP1.
I was one for sure back in the day, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Way back when. And yeah, because he's, you know, it is a little different with like the lefty and the release and all that stuff. Like, he's kind of a crafty, deceptive pitcher. And it's worth noting that he's not green in a sense that he had that phenomenal 2021 where it was like a 264 ERA, and he did have a lot more strikeouts per inning and everything. You look at a guy though that has those miles on him, and he's still just 28 years old. I think we could see like an SP2 type of performance from him next year if he gets the volume of 180 innings. And I think the 162 ADP is just too deep. It's not reflecting any of that. So I definitely think there has to be regression from the crazy stats he put up in 18 starts, but I think we're sliding him back way too far right now Your thoughts on Trevor Rogers? I know you liked him last year, but do you feel like this, with context of the ADP, feels like a good target still?
Yeah, I think he is definitely an SP3 with like upside for SP2, which and I don't mean that like that's complimentary. Like, I think Trevor Rogers is a good pitcher, and he showed that this year. And I think that there is some cost suppression because it happened later on in the season. Right. Like, it's not like he came out in April and like was this guy that everyone rushed to the waiver wire to add. Right. He took some time to recover from injury and get going. His you know, the shape of those 18 starts were later in the season. If had they come, you know, from April to just past the All-Star break, maybe it would be a little bit different here. But
true.
You know, and then there's also the history, like you've been talking about, of like Rogers being like horrific for those few years, basically since the 2021 season when he was really good. But you know, there's a lot of things to like here. Like, the Orioles took a shot on him. It looked like they lost that trade immediately, with Kyle Stowers coming off and looking like a legit bat in Miami's lineup. But right on cue, it looked like they fixed Trevor Rogers after him not really being a contributor for them when they acquired him at the 2024 deadline. So, props to them. Like, you know, the Orioles are going after it again. You know, they've made some big trades. They acquired Taylor Ward. They signed Pete Alonso. So, I think they have some big plans with Trevor Rogers to be a mainstay in that rotation, and believe in it, right? Like, they traded Grayson Rodriguez, right? And it doesn't look like the Orioles pitching staff is a strength, but they wouldn't do that if they didn't believe in some of them, right? Like, they can't just sign like five guys. Like, they have to have a few guys there, and Trevor Rogers is probably a reason why they felt a little bit comfortable moving on from a guy that has so much potential and did show flashes of it too, right? So
yeah,
sort of reading between the tea leaves there as far as a team context wise. But yeah, there's a lot to like, and Trevor Rogers 109 innings in 2025 was extremely encouraging.
Yeah,
to say it lightly.
I know it. And it's an interesting little chunk of the ADP range where, like, we really like Sandy Alcantara, who's going four picks before him. So the more I look at this kind of area of the draft, I'm trying to look at some other names like Imanaga. There's just some glue pieces or like some stabilizers in that 150 territory, to where, like, going off my Mizorowski target earlier, I would love a build of like, get your ace tier, you know, and if it's not the first three guys, maybe it's like Brian Wu, who we liked, Wu, Mizorowski, and then find some stability with like Alcantara and Trevor Rogers on like a double tap. Like, I would be pretty happy with that, thinking I could have two potential SP1s pop, and then I have these kind of 180 to 200 innings pitched stable horses that are just helping me with ratios and everything. So, you know, it's too early to say roster construction approach type of stuff, but, you know, I think that that's just looking at the names that we like as targets, that's starting to seem like the shape of where I would be interested. And what I like about those is Mizorowski's coming at the end of that tier. That's super exciting. And Wu is coming at the end of that tier of like SP 4 to 16 or something. So, I'm starting to like that shape of a draft, I guess.
Yeah. If you like a few of those guys ahead of them, you have guys that like you could fall back on and like, okay, this is the end of the tier limit. Like, I know you should start runs, not end them. But if there's guys that you like sort of at cliffs, that's something nice to have in your back pocket too. But
yep.
Hey, I mean, I guess if other people like them too, you could get sniped there, but
yep. You know. Okay. Well, Steve, talk to me about another, Estav special here, and one that I have not really formed an opinion on for this season, even though we've loved them in years past.
This is Yordan Alvarez. I know it's like not a bargain ADP or anything like that.
39.
And yeah. I have ADP 39. I have fallen for this trap plenty of times before, right? Like, you know, elite hitter coming off injury, should bounce back. But I think this is different. Yordan's still in the prime of his career. I know it came, was as bad as a year could go for him. Just, you know, gameplay wise, and, you know, you spent probably a mid to late first round pick on him and basically got, you got six home runs. Like, when you're counting on, even if you do believe that there's upside of like 45, like you project him in for like 30, right? Even with time that he could potentially miss, and knowing that there's lingering hand injuries, but to get that production, an OPS that didn't start with an 8 for him is shocking, right? Usually you see 9s and sometimes 10s on those OPSs. But that being said, I think it was sort of as bad as a year can go for him. It was another hand injury, which was concerning, but it was a broken hand, so like hopefully that's fully healed, not something that's just still lingering, right? And when he did come back from that in August, he had a great 19-game run and looked sort of like his old self, and then had a season-ending ankle injury. The good news is that, you know, he's expected to start a full healthy offseason, and with that, you know, maybe the ADP goes up. But there also is another thing going against him as far as ADP-wise. I know we didn't want to talk about like this in an ADP value strictly show, more of just guys that we like, but he also doesn't have outfield eligibility. But for non-FBC leagues, he will have outfield eligibility because he did play at least 5 games or 10 games in the outfield last year. And going forward, he's only going to be a DH, or mostly DH, in 2026, which I think is a great thing for his health and just keeping his bat in the lineup. So yeah. I think Alvarez can get fully healthy and have a bounce back year. I know year over year it is a bit concerning with the barrel rate going from 21% to 18% to 14.5% to 13.8%, but let's see where that bounces back to. Like, the hard hit rate was still elite. Like, you know, the max EV wasn't there, but I really just think you can't really put too much stock into this 48 game sample that was pretty injury riddled. I'm willing to give him a pass and bet on the track record of him just being a guy that is a rare combination of batting average and unbelievable power that has, you know, the potential to hit 40 homers, even though his career high is shockingly only 37.
Yeah, it is encouraging. Just, I think there's an article, just yesterday, talking about how, I mean, it was just somebody from the Houston Chronicle, but who is saying they will likely have him at DH every day. And it's like, if that's the trade off to just ensure that we get 135, could it be more? Could it be 145 games of Yordan Alvarez? That's where surely there's a 40 home run season in here. And it's a good point, Steve, that like he is still 28 years old. Like it feels like, because of how much it's always like, oh, there's something wrong with him, you got to bake in the injury. I think in my mind, I'm like, what is he now, 32? It's like, no, it's like he's still right in that power prime. So the only thing I'd say about it is, and I know that we were just drafting him as like a first rounder, but it feels like he's still, like, I wish the discount was more, but.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, guess.
What, you still got to send a late second or early third round pick on him, right?
Yeah, probably third round pick, which isn't, I mean, when you think about it in those terms, I'm just thinking like top 40, but hitters around him right now, it's like Mookie is behind him, Bryce Harper is behind him. I mean, he's still in a different class in terms of power average that you can bank on if he stays healthy. So, and it's a good note that he got through the hand issues, and then it was just like, okay, it's an off year, and like now you got the hamstring. So I like it, man. I think definitely in those home leagues, but even in NFBC leagues, we've seen that utility tax go too far with guys like Ozuna in the past, exactly. So it's a good one. All right, we've got a couple more names. It's fun rifling through these, but we're going to have to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, thought the 200th episode was, you know, a special occasion, and like, a bottle of wine that you wait to open. I think this will be the first time I've voluntarily brought up a relief pitcher on the show.
Look at us, we're growing. 200 episodes in.
Yeah, it just takes 200. Abner Uribe, and I know this one's tough, crystal ball, because there's closer trade talks with Trevor McGill. He's linked with the Mets, with the Yankees, and Uribe's already, it's like writing on the wall. A lot of insiders for the Brewers are saying like, oh, it's his closer job no matter what, and McGill's probably going to be moved, blah, blah, blah. Uribe got 7 saves last year, so it's not like he's been a zero in that. But this pitcher, and I know it's not a new name, it's one that we've really been like lighting up about for, it feels like, 2 or 3 years. But the stuff is so, so good. He's still just 25 years old. Elite ground ball pitcher, sits 99 with the fastball. Like, there is just ridiculous swing and miss stuff that he has with his slider. So Uribe to me feels like, you know, it's going to feel blasphemous to say like Mason Miller type of skill set, but like every now and then those relievers come along, like Hader, Mason Miller, where like you can't turn off the TV when they're on because their stuff is so electric. Like, it really is the word to say is electric. Uribe has that stuff. The Brewers should win 85 games. You know, they just won 95 this year. If he can have that opportunity locked down, my question is just how steep the draft investment comes. Like, I think he could be a top 75 pick, top 60 pick. Like, I'm curious what the question marks are about the pitcher, about the stuff. I know he's had like some bumps, but last year he was insanely good, and all the years before that we were saying his stuff is insanely good. So I just think he's turning a corner to where he is at some point in his career probably going to be like RP1 through 3, like in that very top tier. And right now his ADP is 178, although that's going to be moving up really, really fast if McGill does get dealt. But for a guy who loves any bargain I can get on closers and relievers, Uribe is definitely a target right now that is on the Christmas wish list. But talk to me about your thoughts on Uribe or the relief landscape in general.
I mean, he's got as good a skills as any really closer that there is, other than, like, I don't know, Edwin Diaz and Mason Miller, right? Like, but he's just a slight tier below them, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and you look at the guys that Milwaukee produces just all the time, right? From Devin Williams to Trevor McGill to Abner Uribe. Like, it seems logical that he's ready to take the step. I know it's speculation, and you need that trade to happen. And then even then, like, you need them not to sign a potential closer, which I don't think they will. And a lot of the closers are already signing as we're through winter meetings here, right? With Kenley Jansen and everything going to the Tigers, and Williams to the Mets, and Diaz to the Dodgers. So that's I don't think there's like a big name that would be like, oh, like, that's who he's going to close for the Brewers if they sign him and trade McGill. But I mean, even still, like, do we think that Uribe's skills are slightly better than McGill's? Like, I think, yes. So, right?
Yes.
You know, I know that's would be really hard to just, you know, usurp a incumbent closer who just had, you know, 30 saves and a 31% strikeout rate himself. But, you know, McGill's never thrown more than the 47 innings he did last year, and did have an IL stint when Uribe did close, right, and was good doing so. So, you know, I even if McGill doesn't get traded, like, right now Roster Resource has Uribe as the closer. I know that's based probably just on, you know, projection and skill-wise, right, and age and maybe just slotting him there for whatever reason, just anticipating a McGill trade.
Exactly.
But, you know, 75 innings of a 30% strikeout rate and a 104 whip with a 167 ERA is no joke. And, could potentially be one of the elite closers in the game if he does get that role. It's just a matter of when that happens, whether that's during the offseason or maybe even in season if they do a trade, not necessarily even like a sell, right? Like, they could just improve from an area, right? Like, the Brewers always have these relievers, right? Their bullpen's always good. And I'm sure they have someone that could slide in to that setup role, and they wouldn't lose a beat with Jared Koenig and Aaron Ashby, who looks good in a relief role. I'm sure they have another righty that could slide into that role there that maybe I don't even know about.
Yeah. I think some of it is age as well, with McGill being 32 and it's an arbitration year, and they're not a major market team. So I think when they've got found gold that kind of dupes on a position, I know real baseball, obviously you love having a bullpen with these options, but
I mean, look what they did with Devin Williams to the Yankees, right? Like they moved Devin Williams, didn't miss a beat in the bullpen, and found a few pieces, right, to fill in on their lineup, right? Like, so they sort of mix and match. They got Caleb Durbin, who I know wasn't great fantasy wise, but was a good real life player, right? That's kind of how they have to piece it together, right? So when they do have a strength, they trade from it and acquire where they need elsewhere. It seems like it's logical to do that with McGill now.
Yeah, I think they will. So I guess that is the gamble, and that's why it's at 178 and not an ADP of like 60 or something.
But yeah, I mean, it would be close to a top 100 pick if McGill does get traded and they announce Uribe as the closer, right?
Yeah, I think so, because that's, I mean, Trevor McGill is
ADP. What you got to hope happens is that they make the trade and then say, we're not going to name a closer right now, but, you know who the closer is based on skill wise.
So it just suppresses the stock even more. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, back to you, Steve, for your last one here for episode 200.
This is another WAF special, or at least my guy special. That's Jack Leiter at ADP 262. I was shocked that Jack Leiter's ADP is 262. Like,
it's deep. It's almost
this
free.
This breakout sort of happened, right? Like, did we miss the second half where Jack Leiter looked basically like a stud? Where he had a 26% strikeout rate, a 9.7 walk rate, and was 23rd in K-minus BB among qualified starting pitchers in the second half. He was ahead of guys like Hunter Brown, Nick Favetta, Sandy Alcantara, who all we, this podcast included, couldn't stop gushing about how good his second half was.
Yep.
There was increased changeup usage. He ditched a sinker in July, and it looked like he finally put it together. Like every single time Eno Saris put out an article on The Athletic about Stuff Plus, Jack Leiter was always at the top, but we're like, it's not really happening, but maybe, his stuff is still great. Well, it finally happened in the second half, and nobody's buying it. I mean, I'll gladly buy it for now. Like, he looks like he's finally turning the corner and becoming really, really good. I know that there's some unsightly numbers on the whole for the year, including that walk rate that's above 10% and just a 23% strikeout rate. Like, that, right? That was the thing with Leiter. It's like, how does he have all this good stuff and he's striking out only 19% of the guys? Well, in the second half, he put it together and started striking out guys and started missing bats and started putting guys away. And really, the stuff sort of told you that was only a matter of time. And, talk about a guy that could jump up to, like we were talking about with Trevor Rogers, right? Like, this guy has all of the prospect hype, all of the skills, all of the stuff. He's 25 years old now. Like, he could finally be putting together. And, I know there were some warts in that second half, right? It wasn't like, he was the best pitcher in the league, right? But, sure. If you do some game log stats, there's those 10 strikeout starts came in the second half, mixed in with some seven and eights, and he looked really good once he sort of figured that out.
The walks, too, are good for the game log. Yeah, 10 Ks, one walk.
Yeah.
Oh, so, man, yeah. I mean, Leiter, it's like you can make the argument against, you can try to poke holes in it, and you're right, Steve, there's so many reasons to be excited. I mean, not least of all, just his fastball, the prospect pedigree. But you could say, like, oh, the he needs a secondary to come along. He needs a true swing and miss pitch that performs better than what we saw last year. But he started doing that in the last month or two, and the ADP of 270 or whatever you said it is so, like, to me, I feel like this same argument could easily be warranted at pick 200 flat, where these guys always are like, oh man, I really like him. It could work out. And if it does, he is a guy who could spike. I mean, given volume, if things click for Jack Leiter, he has more upside than some of the names we've talked about. He could become an ace. Absolutely. And so for all that stuff to be at a 262 ADP, when the last thing he left us with was 10 strikeouts and one walk against the Guardians, is just a head scratcher. So yeah, I'm smiling.
And like a guy that
here.
Had such hype as a prospect, and like for an industry that hypes up these pitching prospects, like we really gave up on him after the, you know, 35 innings last year and whatever the first 100 and the first 80 this year, first 90 this year. Like, come on, that's barely even a full season of data.
I think this is such a good call, man. There's just like people not walking the walk when it comes to all the cliches, and prospect growth isn't linear. And when you look at the entirety of the profile, it's one thing. Then you consider the prospect pedigree. Then you consider the second half. It makes no sense why this isn't like at the latest ADP 200. So I'm with you. I think this is a great one that honestly makes me want to just launch into some early drafts if these are still the numbers. Have you gotten in one yet or thought about it?
No, I haven't, but I thought about it, and it'll be soon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, turn of the new year is usually when I fully get into some of the early industry ones for me. I know that there's still plenty happening right now, but yeah, those are good names, man. Your four were Leiter, Alvarez, Ben Rice, and Tatsuya Ima. And mine were Jacob Mizorowski, Yandy Diaz, Trevor Rogers, and Abner Uribe, with the big asterisk of what's happening with Trevor McGill. And also the big asterisk of where will Tatsuya Ima land, which hopefully we find out in the next few weeks. These are great names, Steve. I feel like it was a fun, worthy show of Christmas and of episode 200. So, congrats, man. Any big Christmas plans you want to share with the people?
No. Staying local. Have a bunch of family over, friends. Watch some football. I guess now that football's now on Christmas.
That's right.
And it's a Thursday, so it's not too crazy. Last year was like a Wednesday. It's like, oh my God, it's like, just stick to like a few days of the week. Like I enjoyed it so much more then. I don't know. That's leave baseball to be on, you know, in the summer, every single day, every single hour. That's the sport I want all the time.
Stay in your lane.
Any
guesses? Alyssa got me the Hallmark Christmas baseball guy. This was a guy who you have loved over the years. I had him on my home league last year. I didn't know how I felt about it, and he ended up being an excellent performer in his second round ADP value.
Trey Turner
is correct.
Yeah, I knew that like the second you start. I should have said it sooner.
Well, where I was going to go eventually is at one point, I believe you wrote a pitcher list bold prediction that Trey Turner would be 1-1, is that right?
Yeah.
Am I remembering that?
That? Right.
Okay.
That is right.
Yeah, Trey Turner, man. He's a good one.
I think that speaking of bold predictions, I think it's going to be a New Year's resolution for me. I want to get a written bold prediction back on the site this year.
It is fun because we
aim to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It gives us content for the show too, and we could follow along with it all year. So
I know
it gives us at least two episodes, right? Like we review them and talk about them when we when we do it. We'll definitely do an episode, but I'll try and get some written thoughts down there. I know those take a lot of effort, but we'll take my time and maybe start early and do it.
Well, you already got a head start.
I already got a Ben Rice
things.
One, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This episode helps. Yeah,
I would say hold me to it as well, but a massive solo project I'm doing. I don't know if I told you about this. It's our 25th year anniversary for my home league that I'm the commissioner of. And for our road trip this year, which we always drive to, you know, within a 6-hour radius to different ballparks, for the first time ever, we're doing the flight down to Tampa late April and doing a Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday. And we're golfing Saturday, going to the game Saturday night. So Friday night's wide open. And I've got this, you know, filmmaker, you know, side hustle in me. So I'm doing a little documentary on our league, interviewing all of the managers and digging up all these archival home videos that we have from like draft days. So I've already got like 4 interviews down with like lighting, and each of them are like bashing each other, like the managers, so that, you know, when it's going to feel like Ocean's 11 introducing managers. So that is
amazing.
Unfortunately going to suck up a massive amount of my free time outside of work and the show. But yeah, I will definitely get you a copy of that.
If you need any help or feedback, I'd love to help out there and throw my name on as an executive producer or something.
You know? I might just need an interview with you for you to say what you've heard about from the outside looking in. So yeah. Oh man. All right. Well, Steve, great doing 200. Appreciate all the sentiments you said up front. This has been a privilege. And again, thank you to the listeners who have been there from the start and keep coming back, or who have joined in and are looking forward to the next 200. But that's episode 200, talking our Christmas wish list. Till next time, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Have a good holiday.